This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and live to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
Okay, we got the sports dad in the house here. We got myself, Phil Mackey, and the Wolves have the Nuggets officially, Judd, in the first round starting on Saturday. We're still waiting on game times, I think. Do we have a game? We don't have a game time yet for Saturday.
No, it depends on, it could be, I think, either like 6 or 8:30, depending on who wins in these next couple days.
Okay.
We're at the mercy of TV.
You know, I even, like, they put out, I kind of hate when NBA PR and media, they put out like, here's 43 different scenarios of what time, just tell me what time they play when we know what time they play.
I think we're down to two scenarios now, but it's still not set. But it's either the early or late game. Does that help?
So it's not an afternoon game, and it's not starting at midnight. So
correct.
By the way, happy Timberwolves Ownership Mediation Day to all who celebrate. Today is a day of awkwardness where Glenn Taylor and his lawyer gets in a room or maybe separate rooms, and they meet in like a neutral room with Alex Rodriguez and Mark Laurie. According to Doogie, he texted us. He's hearing that all three of them are going to be attending the mediation with attorneys also present. So,
yeah,
I don't think anything's going to get solved. But
so, in other words, a team going into the second round for the first time in 20 years today has an ownership dispute that's only starting with a mediation hearing, and the head coach is on an operating table.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. When Doogie texted us, he texted us sort of vaguely. He said, I'm hearing that Taylor, Laurie, and Alex will be present today. And I asked him, at the Finch surgery? Are they all just going to be just bedside?
Yep. Holding his hand? So,
Finch, can you hear us?
So did I see this look correct? In the Sixers win at the Garden last night against the Knicks, Nick Nurse got hurt. He would like punch.
I didn't see him get hurt, no.
He like punched a board or something. He like broke or hurt his hand. So like you've got now two coaches basically injured.
Who worked together very, very closely,
buddies,
right?
Pals. Yeah. Nick Nurse and Finchie were big pals. But So anyway, what a day in Wolves history preparing for the second round. Ownership can't decide. Big fight going on. And the head coach's knee is being put back together or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. On the Finch front real quick, just ESPN. You know, Doogie had some information on this on the scoop session yesterday. ESPN fills in a couple of details that barring complications from his Wednesday surgery, Finch, who finished third in the year for coach of the year voting, snubbed, should be able to travel to Denver with the team on Friday. And then it's just a matter of like logistically figuring out, is it dangerous for him to be sitting near the bench or is he going to be in the back with like a headset? But with the Denver series on the horizon now, this is the heavyweight fight that we've all sort of almost been hoping for. The funny thing is there's a lot, like I see Lakers fans over the past few weeks debating, like, should we look to lose a play-in game so we can avoid Denver or this, that, like Eastern Conference, you got to avoid Boston. I feel like the Timberwolves and Wolves fans have not thought that way at all about avoiding Denver. I think after that series last year was a competitive gentlemen's sweep in five games, it's kind of felt like bring it on a little bit. So how do you feel now that we know that it's the Nuggets coming up here in a few days?
I feel pretty good about it. I honestly think that, and I said this to you probably a month and a half ago, I honestly think the Timberwolves' biggest enemy in the playoffs is themselves. It's not opponents. And yes, Joker is tough to stop, no question. The Nuggets have some very nice pieces. But that being said, if you look at it, first of all of the things that we feared about the Suns, the Wolves had answers for. Now, I would imagine, again, they're going to have some things that the Nuggets have not seen. A year ago, at least one of the Nuggets players said that their hardest out was the Wolves. Mm-hmm. this Wolves team, just by the fact that Jaden McDaniels hasn't punched a wall and Nas has not got hurt, has more players. But you know what I really love? Like, in looking at the Lakers-Nuggets box score from Game 5 on Monday, and this was a series that, by the way, was super competitive. So it didn't go long, but it was competitive.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it, the Nuggets basically do a lot of the same things from a rotational standpoint that the Suns did. Like, the Wolves are deep. The Wolves can have a different guy or guys play key roles. Now, if Ant emerges in the second half, like he did in the last game in Phoenix, that's awesome. But, like, you think about, just mentally go through the role of how many guys we saw who were, like, key factors. And off the bench in Game 5 against the Lakers, the Nuggets had Watson, Holiday, and Braun didn't play. They played 5, 4, and 6 minutes respectively. Yeah. Reggie Jackson played 18. That's it. So just from a standpoint of depth and just from a standpoint of rolling guys at you, Wolves got some – I think the Wolves definitely have an advantage. It's not that they're going to play a lot more guys than Denver. I just think that there's more trust in the guys they do play, but that gets to be extremely important in giving out the minutes in a game.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna expand on what you just brought up, and I'll frame it this way. It feels like Denver is a slightly lesser version of the team that beat the Timberwolves in the playoffs last year. And it feels like the Timberwolves are slightly or even a level or two better than they were last year. Starting on the Denver side, Jamal Murray has a calf injury. Yep. And he's playing through it, but in the warmups before that clinching Game 5, and by the way, like, he daggered the Lakers with a big three and then that little floating shot in the paint to win the game. Yep. He had the two game winners at the end of the series. Like, yep. So he seems to be fine and dangerous, but he's nursing a calf problem. So at any given moment, could that thing be a problem? Could that limit him in any way? The other thing is Bruce Brown was with the Pacers and then the Raptors. I think he got traded the Raptors to end the season, but Bruce Brown was one of their key driving role players on last year's team. In that series against the Timberwolves, Bruce Brown was a plus 38 off the bench in the five games. And so he's not on their team anymore. So again, like, that's a key chess piece that's not with them this year. And just another thing on that Nuggets Lakers series, it looks on paper like, oh, they took care of the Lakers in a gentleman's sweep, five games, you know, Jokic put up a bunch of big numbers. But the Nuggets trailed in 70% of the minutes in that series. Yes. And they trailed by double digits in, I think, three or four of the games.
Yes.
But because they've got this end game second half thing mastered, and Jokic is just a wizard and he's the best player in the NBA, he's one of the greatest players of all time, they still found a way to grind out wins over the Lakers. But again, it feels like they're still a championship caliber team, but it feels like a slightly lesser version than the Wolves faced last year. And on the Wolves side, you brought up Jaden and Nas. That's not to be glossed over. The Timberwolves are adding one of the best perimeter defenders in the league to a team that didn't have him last year in the playoffs. And Naz Reid is the sixth man of the year and tends to match up in a tough way with these Nuggets teams. The Gobert fit and chemistry is much better now than it was a year ago.
Yes.
With a year of Mike Conley and Nikhil Alexander-Walker. And maybe most importantly, Anthony Edwards, as great as he was in that series last year, I think is a level better with his playmaking, decision-making, just being locked in and focused for the 40 minutes that he's on the court. So is that enough to close a gap that it was a five-game series loss last year? Are the Nuggets slipping a step maybe and the Wolves taking a step forward? Is that enough for the Wolves to win this thing in six or seven games? I think it might be.
I'm not cocky, but I'm confident. I think it's going to be a great series. I think it's going to be a war. And the one thing I'll say about the Wolves played the Nuggets really tough in going out in five. Like, they did play them tough last season. But make no mistake, as a team, this Wolves team, in part because of what you just talked about with Gobert, is a far better team. And I think Phoenix learned what everyone the Wolves play is going to learn, which is the Timberwolves in their current incarnation are a pain in the ass to play against. They might lose this series, but they're going to tire you out, and they're going to make you sweat.
The Wolves are like the San Francisco 49ers or something, where it's like they're just going to give – they're systematic.
You know what they remind
precise.
Me of?
Precise.
Hockey teams in playoffs. But like the teams I praise, like they take away time and space. They frustrate you. For the most part, they did, at least against the Suns, a very good job of not reacting too much. Like Jaden got into it with Booker and what game two a little bit. But if you think about it, there were a lot of times that the Wolves just allowed the frustration of the Suns to pour over the Suns. It might not be, like, from a television standpoint, the most pleasing. Like, it's not run-and-gun basketball. But from if you're trying to win a championship, you know, it partially, in some ways, Phil, borrows from the 1990s. Like, it's not as cheap, but you're going to have to go through them.
Yeah,
I just think that there's a lot to like about their playoff makeup, and I think that they are a hard team to play games against.
It does feel a little bit too like Denver kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, Denver was like getting to the playoffs, but even last year, I think people had kind of labeled Denver in a certain way that, yeah, they're a tough team, but they're not winning the championship. Like, they might be able to get to the Western Conference Finals, but all of a sudden, oh, they're like a tighter honed version of what we've seen before. And they don't get flustered. That's the one thing about Denver that it's just going to be different than the Phoenix Suns. It was pretty obvious, like in the third quarter of game one, oh, the Wolves have completely gotten under the Suns' skin. And the Suns are like now trying to draw fouls that are sort of shady. And, you know, like Anthony Edwards felt fully comfortable after games one and two, just openly taunting Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal. I think there's a certain stoicism about the way the Nuggets play basketball that's going to be tough to crack. You're not going to be able to just like basically mentally take them out of the series, and they're not going to have adjustments or anything.
Right.
It kind of felt too like Frank Vogel would rather be coaching a different roster at times. You know, people kind of pointed out that Frank Vogel, who made his hay in Indiana 10 years ago as a defensive coach, we're going to grind out these games against the Heat and we're going to play lockdown defense. And they gave him like a Mike D'Antoni sort of five-out roster in some ways.
Durant didn't like playing for him.
Yeah. You don't have any of that type of weird lack of chemistry and dissension with the Denver Nuggets, certainly. So here's another thing on the Anthony Edwards front. One thing we talked about when the Gobert trade was made back almost 2 years ago, I remember we talked about this on the first few episodes of Flagrant Howls. We talked about it on Mackey and Judd is the Timberwolves grabbing Rudy Gobert in principle expedites their winning curve that, okay, now they're going to be, and it took them a year, by the way, like they didn't win 50 games in the first year, but the vision played out in year two. But okay, Gobert being added to this collection immediately makes you a playoff team, immediately puts at the time a 21-year-old Anthony Edwards into a spotlight that, hey man, like some guys don't get to this point until they're 25 or 26 where you're one of the best teams in the West.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
And Nate Jones on Twitter brought back this. I love that he brought this back up. It's Jones on the NBA on Twitter. He tweeted last night, the Rudy Gobert trade is the only reason we are seeing Anthony Edwards get to do his thing on this stage already. It basically changed the trajectory and speed of the ascension of the franchise. They aren't this defensive juggernaut without that trade. And I heard a lot of people at the time of that trade, Judd, say, you're cutting off the future. You're trading away all these future assets and first-round picks.
Right.
And it's like you're going for like this short-term sugar high spike, kind of like they did with the Jimmy Butler trade 6 years ago. And you're cutting off the long-term tail of the franchise. You're trying to expedite something that should not be expedited. And I always thought, well, wait a second. Okay, so Gobert is going to make the team better. Let's say he comes in and, you know, you get to the playoffs, but you're kind of one and done for a couple of years and it doesn't work out and you have to trade him or Carl Anthony Towns. Well, you can get first round picks back if you trade one of those two guys. And you still have 21, 22, 23 year old Anthony Edwards in that window, who's going to be like, when the Gobert contract is over, Anthony Edwards won't even have peaked yet. And you've got, like, you know, Jaden McDaniels is 23 years old. So it never really made sense to me, but isn't that amazing that if they don't make that trade, they aren't beating the Suns in the first round. Anthony Edwards isn't exploding as a superstar the way that he has been. He's not playing the Nuggets in the second round as a 22-year-old. So I think it's a great observation that we talked about 2 years ago that Nate Jones brought back up on Twitter last night.
I think it amazes me the most about the transformation of Gobert's role on the team from seemingly a dud of a trade to, like, oh boy, this isn't working. Not to, oh, it's pretty good, but to, oh, this is great.
It's like the championship piece potentially that, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it would have made more sense in your mind if Gobert had stepped in and it had just started to work and then it took off. It didn't work and then it took off. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's like, I get why at first for a season, essentially, it was like, oh, boy. And then, yes, there's no question. I mean, Gobert... Ant is part of it, man, but forget him for a second. Just look at the entire roster and, like, what Gobert has meant for this entire team and for Cat. Like, we can argue about Cat's role, and we can argue about, you know, if you're a Cat stan or you're just... But the reality is, the more and more in this season, we have seen Cat put in really, especially in the playoffs, an ideal role for Cat. With Gobert here, that never comes close to taking place because he's posting up more. He's trying to play a position that he now doesn't have to play. And I know it sometimes that can be a problem, but I don't buy all of this. Well, you've totally asked him to transform his game, and that's tough. I think he's more comfortable playing this game. Like it takes advantage of everything he does well. Go out and shoot threes. Okay, cool. And guess what? He's a cold stone 3-point killer in these playoffs so far. So yeah, the Gobert thing, I'm amazed it went from, oh, this is a jalopy train wreck, to, oh no, it's not. This is actually what we all thought it might be.
Yeah. What it actually did was it didn't, like, cut off your future or put, like, a shelf life on it. It supercharged your future because you're going to be playing in these, like, second round Nuggets. If you might get to the Western Conference Finals when Anthony Edwards Anthony Edwards is going to be like a battle scarred playoff warrior by the age of 23.
Yep.
And some guys don't even get their first look at the playoffs because there's a certain, it's pretty rare that you just come in as a young player in the NBA in your teens, early 20s, and you're ready to dominate the playoffs. The playoffs are just a different beast, and you've got Hall of Famers up and down that don't want their spot to be taken. And the fact that he is in here taking those spots at age 22, And it's in large part because of the defensive anchor that Rudy Gobert is. Mm-hmm. And also, not to be discredited, like I said, you've got these 23-year-olds on the team. Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, assuming that they keep him long-term too. Like, that nucleus of 22 and 23-year-olds is getting crazy valuable high-end playoff experience. And maybe some of the other pieces change around them. Like, at some point, Gobert's age doesn't align with those other guys. Maybe that becomes a thing toward the end of the contract. But, like, by then, Anthony Edwards is going to be emerging into his prime in 2 or 3 years, having played in several high-end, big-time playoff series against Hall of Fame players.
Yeah,
and that's how you supercharge your chances to win titles throughout his 20s.
Invaluable experience, right? Just absolutely. His role might change, but I mean, this experience is so key. And to his credit, he's also grabbed it by the throat. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, oh, Ant was a little more timid than I expected. He has done everything at the age of 23 in the playoffs thus far, at least in the first series, that you could possibly ask. And going back to his credit, you know, his statistical performance in the playoffs is damn good. So, yeah, I think that this experience is fantastic. And this is also where Finch and the coaching staff, I think, get a lot of credit, because whatever went wrong a year ago, Gobert was hurt, Cat was hurt, but also guys didn't gel. They literally fixed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a team in the playoffs right now that is more galvanized than this team.
Yeah. A couple more things here just on the Ant front. Let's shout out Autograph first, because I just found something, a comparison that is kind of wild here. But our new friends at Autograph, Judd, are providing a great experience for fans, for Timberwolves fans specifically. So you can download the free Autograph app and use the code word SCORE to access the newly launched Timberwolves community, which allows you to read articles from your favorite team's blogs and publishers directly in the Autograph app. Listen to the top podcasts like Flagrant Howls that talk about your favorite team in the Autograph app. It's a one-stop shop if you are a Wolves fan or a fan of any team to consume the content and interact with fans all in one place. Refer your friends, get rewarded together, unlock curated exclusive rewards like discounted tickets, signed memorabilia, and more. Again, download the free Autograph app. Use the code word SCORE. I'm even going to put a QR code on the screen here for the YouTube audience. You can just snap a shot of that QR code. And you can get rewarded for all the things you already do as a Wolves fan. That's referral code SCORE in the Autograph app. So I think we're getting out a little ahead of ourselves with some of these comparisons. But I have heard in the last 48 hours, Stephen A. Smith, Bill Simmons, and Ryan Russillo all have the Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant comparison conversation in a non like hyperbole way, where all of them are staring into the camera or into their microphones and saying, this might sound kind of crazy, but the way that he looks at his opponents, the way that he scores at every level, the way that he's got that extra level of, I want to murder everyone,
right?
Basketball murder everyone in front of me. It's that same killer look in his eye that Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant had. And dude, if you look at, again, he hasn't even turned 23 years old, right? He doesn't turn 23 until August 5th. And so far in his playoff career, he's averaging 29 points a game, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 48% from the field, and just under 40% from 3-point range on like 9 attempts per game. So Kobe Bryant's playoff career, I'm just going to do this. Kobe Bryant played in the playoffs from age 18 through 33. He averaged 3 fewer points per game than Anthony Edwards. He averaged a half rebound less per game than Anthony Edwards. They averaged the same number of assists. Anthony Edwards shoots 4% better on field goals, 7% better on 3-point attempts. Now, Kobe's doing it and winning championships and putting together a dynasty. And you could argue that maybe early, like the first 4 playoff runs, maybe like his production was a little suppressed because Shaq was the main man. Mm-hmm. But the fact that before the age of 23, before his peak is anywhere near, he's putting up better playoff numbers than Kobe Bryant over 15 years.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
But I mean, we've seen it. It is until you see it. Like, that's the thing about this is we weren't hard on Cat because we didn't like him. It was just inconsistency. And as the national pundits talked about, there was a general sort of playoff softness. Mm-hmm. Now, that has not been seen now because this team is different. But part of that is the mentality is set by Ant. Like, I don't, you know, to go back to game 2, when because of his shooting from the field that night, almost everyone agrees he had a bad game. And we were like, no, actually didn't have a bad game. He didn't have a good shooting game, but he did a lot of the little things. He's 23. Mm-hmm. Most 23-year-olds would go into a funk at that point and they would be lost. He basically said, okay, my shooting's off. I'm still going to shoot, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm also going to have a all-around box score that no one's going to look at because they look at my shooting. Like, you can, these conversations are born from watching players and seeing what the mentality is, I think. Because playoffs are all about mentality and, they're all about talent and then your mentality to back that up. You can be the most talented guy in the world, but if you don't have the mentality of, I am going to go through you, I'm going to do whatever I have to, I don't care. You know, it comes back to, as I continue to say, I don't think playoffs are supposed to look fun for players. I think they're supposed to look like anger. And Ant is, I know he's loved, talks trash to Durant. It's awesome because they both smile. But he plays with an edge and an anger that is like, yeah. oh, he's going to win this game. You don't see a guy who's just jovial, laughing with opponents who you say, he's going to win this game. So, like, there are things about Ant that I think from, and the national, for the most part, the national pundits are getting their first chance to see it. You look in that dude's eyes, you see that.
Yeah, I love that point. It's like there's something unquantifiable about the way that he looks, like literally the way that you're right. Like, if you can look in his eyes, there's just something very self-assured in a moment against Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, playoffs, national TV. You're only 22 years old, where a lot of guys would probably feel a little overwhelmed. Like the NBA playoffs can swallow up even some of the greatest players. I mean, look at like Joel Embiid, and I get that he's nursing always, you know, a knee or something, but yep. Joel Embiid needed to be bailed out of that game. He had like 10 turnovers. He had a triple double. Really, it was like a quadruple double because he had turnovers too. But they're like Joel Embiid oftentimes looks different in the postseason in a bad way. Devin Booker, I know he dropped 49 points, but there's a lot of times where frustration will just boil over for him, or you can see sort of almost like an overwhelmed look on his face. Anthony Edwards seems like the most assured player on the floor. And I know there's no way to quantify that, but you know, you're on the road. There's 18,000 people screaming at you. It's national TV. You're thinking about legacy, maybe. Like, there's all these forces that could make you shrink. And Carl has been susceptible to that throughout his playoff career at times. We named a couple other players. Jimmy Butler seems like a guy that oftentimes uses all of those factors as fuel and energy. Michael Jordan used them as fuel and energy. Kobe, right? Mm-hmm. You can either let those factors overwhelm you, or you can use those factors to supercharge you. And it seems like Anthony Edwards uses all those factors to supercharge his performance. And I know that there's not like a stat to quantify that. It's just something that I just see and feel watching, you know, 30 years of NBA playoffs. So I don't know. Maybe that was just gibberish to people, but that's what I see when I watch him play in the playoffs.
And basketball is such a good barometer because there's no face masks, helmets, there's close-ups, right? Like, you can literally see that. And I think there's a big difference between trying to convince yourself that you're going to win and being convinced that you're going to win. And Ant is the latter. You know, it got publicity because he accidentally hit a person. But when he missed that shot in the final game at Denver last playoffs and he flipped the chair, he did that because he was legitimately pissed because he thought they were going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can say, but you weren't going to, but he doesn't have that wiring.
Mm-hmm.
We've all covered guys who they're like, we're going to go out there and win. And you're like, no, you're not. You know, you're not. Right.
Yeah.
But a guy like Ant is convinced of that. And if you get around him, you will become convinced too. And that's the one thing. So that's where Ant has a different switch, in my opinion, than Butler. Butler is unbelievable in big games, but I feel it's all internalized to Jimmy Butler. Ant involves his team, which is almost another special attribute.
Yeah.
Like I don't know how to, and this is not to put in this sense Butler down, because those games are incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never felt like when he was here, I never felt it involved the Timberwolves. I always felt it involved Jimmy.
It does. You know what? That's a great point. It does. In fact, back here, I don't know if you can see it on screen. Yeah, you kind of can. This book right here on the YouTube audience. That's Phil Jackson's 11 Rings book, which if you're a basketball fan, it's an amazing read.
Mm-hmm.
I know people kind of like, well, Phil, it'd be nice to have Michael Jordan and Kobe and Shaq. Yeah, obviously, like he doesn't have 9 rings as a coach and 11 overall if he doesn't have those amazing rosters. But it's an autobiography, but it's a lot about his team building philosophies. And he talks about the 5 stages of tribalism and team building. And I can't remember exactly what all 5 stage, like stage number 1 is like, everything's toxic. Everyone hates everyone, and it's just terrible. And we've actually seen some of that with the Timberwolves over the years.
Timberwolves, yeah.
Yeah. But then there's like, once you get to like stage three, it's kind of a, you can win games as a stage three because it's kind of like selfish. I want to go prove, and then the other person wants to go prove. And it's a bunch of like individual people fighting their egos and wanting to perform. And Jimmy Butler sort of sometimes fits into that, where even he's so good and he's such a force that he can kind of say, screw you to the people around him and just carry something.
Yep.
But the fifth stage of tribal, of like team tribalship, if you will, if that's even a word, is it doesn't even matter who your opponent is. It's all five of us or all 15 of us sharing. We love each other. We're just operating on a cloud above everyone else. And it's the most, it's fun. It's, but it's focused. It's the Warriors from 10 years ago, like before Kevin Durant even arrived. It was like, bang, bang, boom. Everyone's in sync. This is us just having a glorious time, free of any burden. And you have to, you know, you have to have good enough players to create, but you have to create that as a team. And Anthony Edwards, it feels like his personality creates that. It's touch points with everyone.
And
it's
look at
pumping
him and
Kat, his teammates' tires, but holding them accountable at the
post-game.
Same time. Yeah.
Post game, they sit together at the podium, and Ant basically said, I told this MF-er to stop fouling, and everybody laughs.
Yeah.
But like, he's serious.
Yeah, dude, I found it. So stage three, this is Phil Jackson's five stages of tribal leadership. Stage one is shared by most street gangs and characterized by despair, hostility, and the collective belief that life sucks.
Shared by many Timberwolves teams.
Yeah.
Yep.
Stage two, filled primarily with apathetic people who perceive themselves as victims who are passively antagonistic, like the mindset of my life sucks. Mm-hmm. Think about like The Office on TV, where everyone is kind of, you know, it's a comedy, obviously, but
right.
Just kind of harumph and victims.
Right.
Stage three, focused primarily on individual achievement,
yep,
driven by the motto, I'm great and you're not.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Jimmy Butler, dude. You nailed Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
According to the authors of the book, the people and organizations at this stage have to win individually, have to win. And for them, winning is personal. They will outwork and outthink their competitors on an individual basis.
Yep.
That's Jimmy Butler is. And you can win games, stage three, tribal leadership.
Ryan Suter right there.
Suter?
He did the same thing. Yep.
Stage four is dedicated to tribal pride and the overriding conviction that we're great and they're not. This type of team requires a strong adversary, and the bigger the foe, the more powerful the tribe. So it's we believe, it's not just individual people going into business for themselves.
Definitely the Wolves first round.
The right Wolves there. Are the Wolves are for sure a stage four leadership team right now.
Yep, definitely. That's perfect.
Stage five is a rare stage characterized by a sense of innocent wonder and the strong belief that life is great. See Chicago Bulls 1995 through 1998.
Yeah.
See Golden State Warriors 2000.
Wolves aren't, you know, there yet.
Yeah.
But they're definitely at four.
Yeah.
That stage four description is perfect.
The Suns are stage three. It's just a bunch of individual dudes. I need to get mine. I need to do this.
A lot of Durant's career outside of Golden State has been stage three.
Yep.
Brooklyn, I would argue that
the two teams that won the championship with Durant and Golden State kind of went from stage five to stage four.
Yeah.
Where they weren't like, it was certainly wasn't innocent wonder and life is great, because they were kind of fighting each other on the bench and stuff.
Yep.
But I don't know. It's that's whole book is worth a read here for people. But
I mean, that's Ant. Like Ant to me is the center focus of stage four.
Yeah. And maybe stage five at some point. Maybe.
That would be,
we'll see.
Cross our fingers on that one. Yeah. That would be unbelievable, because that would be multiple LOBs.
Oh my God. Okay. Last question for you on this. And we can, there's a million different other Ant conversations we'll have as the playoffs come up. But do you think in your heart of sports dad hearts, your cold, steely sports dad heart that hasn't seen a championship from a men's professional team since 1991, does your sports gut tell you that Anthony Edwards will bring an LOB to the Timberwolves at some point in his career?
Yes. Actually, it does.
I think so, too.
As long as he stays here, and I think he will, yes, it does tell me that.
I think you're right.
There's nothing I've seen from his performances, statistically and watching them, that leads me to believe that he is not a superstar. And not only is he a superstar, but he has the DNA to win a championship, mm-hmm. which might not be the exact same thing all the time.
Yeah. And he's not going to be the full version of himself for probably at least four more years.
It might not be. It could be. But I mean, it might not be with Gobert. Hell, it might not be with Towns. It might be. But I'm just saying, I think at some point in time, he wins a championship.
I agree.
And I think once he wins one, he wins two.
And then once he wins
two. He won't be satisfied. That's the thing. He ain't going to be satisfied with one.
No, because he's going to do the comparison thing. He's going to be like, well, Kobe got three in a row and Michael
remember, he was not necessarily the clear-cut top choice in his draft.
Yeah.
That's the incredible thing.
Yeah. But beat the Nuggets first. That's the first step here.
Gerson, all I'm saying is shout out Gerson. Because, I mean, you had choices there. We could be looking at a modern-day Sam Bowie draft pick if the Wolves hadn't taken it.
Yeah. Because LaMelo was the, let's see here, what was that, 2020?
Yes. And there was conversation about, yes, you are correct.
Because it was, you're right. It wasn't,
and
like.
Ant didn't win the rookie of the year. LaMelo did, right?
Yes. Oh, dude, James Wiseman. Yeah, I went number two. Yeah. And LaMelo Ball went James number three.
And Doogie loved James Wiseman.
Patrick Williams, I mean, Isaac Okoro. Killian Hayes, Obi Toppin.
For all we might say about Gerson, we owe him a big thank you for not screwing that up.
In fact, you could argue the second best player in this draft was the 12th pick, Tyrese Halliburton. With the Pacers. Player. Oh, Tyrese Maxey was 21st. Okay. If you redrafted, it would probably go Anthony Edwards number one, Tyrese Halliburton would probably go number two.
Yeah, both.
I think Maxey would go three, and then LaMelo would probably go four if you redrafted. Might be missing something.
And LaMelo had a lot of steam at the time.
Yeah, he's a good player, but.
Yeah, he ain't Ant Edwards.
No, he is not. He's not. So, all right, well, we will be, you know, the series starts on Saturday. Tons of post-game shows, near daily content here on Flagrant Howls. Jim Peterson is going to join the radio broadcast with Alan Horton, but he's also going to be still weekly, if not more. On Flagrant Howls.
Jim Pete.
And working on another fun little thing for Flagrant Howls that'll be top secret until it happens.
Christian Laettner coming back?
You spoiled it. Isaiah Ryder, actually. He's coming back.
A very deep man. A very deep man. I talked to him once.
I'm sure he is. For the sports dad, Judd, I'm Phil. This is a Timberwolves Lifestyle Podcast.